Can we go? Can I just be clear on this one? As you know, I want to be cremated, and I want who has my ashes to be a point of complete contention.
Yeah, lots of decoy urns, right?
Yeah, I'm going to leave lots of conflicting opinions, written opinions, to lots of different people. Like one person make me into jewelry, one person throw me in the sea. But all of them end with, but don't split my ashes up. Really make people work for it,
Puzzle.
Exactly. It makes you live on. That is a weird way to start a series. Hello and welcome to Our Dad's Died with Tom and
Rich Spaulding.
Richard Spaulding's here. Rich
I'm
Spaulding.
here.
Oh
I'm
my
back. I'm in
God.
the country. Well, in
My
fact, we're not
God.
in the same country for the first time. Because for the
That's
last
true.
couple of weeks, we've been sharing a country. I've been in Edinburgh, you've been in Glasgow.
Yeah, we're not in the same country now, finally,
Yeah.
and
And
that
so
allows
that's
us to talk.
to talk to each other. Yeah. Have more content when we're miles and miles apart.
Amazing. Rich
Series
is,
two.
yeah, I'm so happy you're back from Edinburgh. It's fantastic. I loved
I'm
your
very
show.
happy to
I
be
loved your
back.
show. It was really,
Thank
really
you.
funny.
Thank you for coming. It was, I'll be honest, when I first saw you and your wife Amanda, I mean, you'll remember my first reaction was panic.
It was. You were worried.
Because at that moment, there were, I
Do you
think it
remember
was
what you said?
three, I think my words were, please not today.
Yeah, not today.
Yeah. Because up until that day, we'd had really good numbers in the audience. And then on that day, there were three elderly women in the room and
Yeah.
nobody else. And then you and Amanda turned up. Unfortunately, we did. We got a few more people in. It was
About
'an okay show, but
13, 14, 15 people in the end.
yeah,
Quite good.
which is all right for Edinburgh. That's not too bad. But yeah, there was some real panic when I thought I was going to have to do the show to two of my closest friends and three elderly women who were probably not going to vibe with the content.
Oh, in the end, they were very vibing with the content. They
Yeah,
loved
they got on
it.
board. They
They loved all
did.
the
People
sex stuff in
surprise you.
particular. They couldn't get over
Yeah.
it.
It
Very
is
sexy
it it's a
ladies.
good lesson, the Edinburgh Fringe, in not judging people, because for the very first show, we accidentally flied in, I think, the oldest man in history. I gave him a flyer and he went, "What's that?" And I went, "Oh, it's stand up." And he went, "What's stand up?" And I went, "Like
Oh
comedy." And he went,
no.
"Stand up comedy." And they showed it to his wife and he couldn't read it, so she read it out to him and he went, "Oh, okay." And then he came back for the show and they had a whale of a time. They loved it. And at the end, because I talk in the show about a time where I took some drugs and that went very badly, he then started telling us about the time that he'd taken some acid
Oh.
in the 60s and thought he was being
Wow.
chased by a giant walnut.
Amazing. Well, from the oldest man in history to the oldest dad on this podcast, we have
Yes.
on this week Katie Norris,
We
Rich,
do.
and her dad made it to his 80s.
He did, which is probably, it probably is the record, isn't it, for
It's
us?
definitely the record. We've never had a dad in his 80s before, I don't think.
No, that's got to be the oldest.
We've got the oldest dad.
And it's an interesting story because Katie's dad was quite old when she was born,
Yeah.
which is an interesting new dynamic for the show.
Yeah, and we get into it in this episode. She's hilarious. She's got a show on in London in a couple of weeks, which we'll tell you about at the end of the episode as a tease.
Oh.
Or you can look it up on her Instagram and it'll be there. It'll
Yeah,
be there,
it's not a
won't it?
secret.
It's not a secret. It's not an exclusive.
No, very much the opposite.
It's the opposite. It's she wants people to know.
Yeah, she famously
So
wants people to know.
they can go. All right, we've got Katie Norris on. It's really funny. Check it out, and we'll be back at the end of the episode.
Bye. Katie, what would you have as your funeral song?
Me singing probably.
Like a recording, or
Yeah.
are you planning to sing and then just pop in the coffin and wait?
Yeah, maybe that'll rise me from my grave.
Mm.
The apparently the most popular funeral song is My Way, Frank Sinatra. I wouldn't have that.
Oh,
Yeah.
no, I don't like that as a funeral vibe. seems quite, I mean, funerals are quite self-involved, but then have My Way as well.
The other one is the Monty Python one, isn't it? I can't remember what it's called for some reason, but
oh, Brightside.
You know, come on. Yeah, I always look on the bright side of life.
Mr. Brightside, yeah, the famous
Mr. Brightside. Coming out of my urn, and I've been doing just fine.
Mr. Brightside. I'd have Mr. Brightside.
That would be a great Mr. funeral Brightside. Song.
That's my youth, that is. Or apple bottom jeans, boots with.
Again, a great one.
Spice Girls.
They're both, they're songs that people can't help but get into. So it doesn't matter how sad it is, if you're then walking out of the vibe of the church,
of the vibe,
and Mr. Brightside comes on, you're gonna vibe. Yeah. You're gonna feel it.
My ex-boyfriends, who will all be there, would love that as well. Song about them.
Are they all gonna go?
I bloody hope so. I put a shift in, didn't I?
That's true. What was the point if not to get the numbers up?
It would be great to be able to attend your own funeral, wouldn't it? Just see what everyone, see who made it, see who didn't bother.
How many funerals have you guys been to?
Oh, what a question. Oh my god.
Are
we counting like when you're an adult, when it sort of counts, or when you're a child where you sort of dragged to them and you don't really,
all of them,
whole shebang. We're almost over double figures, I think.
Really?
Quite a lot of funerals. Big family, so it's sort of extended family. So it's a sort of, you know, you would, if the cousin died, you'd go to the cousin's funeral. Or was that probably true?
Yeah, I think that's fairly normal.
But like my mum's sister, we went to that funeral. So like my grandma's sister, we went to her funeral. So that's, I think that's less common funeral for people to go to, I think.
So your parents took you to funerals from a young age then? They didn't sort of try and shield you from all of that stuff or anything?
No, they had me go. Well, my granddad died when I was like 6 and I was fine. So I think they were like, oh yeah, we can
he's resilient.
Rely on him.
We'll just take him to anyone's.
Whenever we're driving by, my dad would pop his head in. Oh, I've got any good ones on today? You know,
yeah, my son is dead inside. I've not been to that many, actually. I've just been to a few. Mm-hmm. I must have a smaller family. The first one I've been to was my granddad. So I was about 13, I think. That was my first one.
13?
Yeah, ooh. And I remember, yeah, it was horrifying.
That feels quite old for funeral number one to me.
Well, yeah. No, I didn't have a passion for going before.
So. No, but what I'm saying is, did nobody die? I mean, did like no grandparents died before you were 13?
No, they were all dead before. Yeah. So I only had one. Right. Yeah, because my dad was really like my dad's parents died in the sort of 80s or early. Yeah,
was your dad quite old?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's 50. He was born.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. So he was born in 1940.
Wow. He was born during the war.
Yeah. So I've got three older
oldest
brothers.
Dad.
The oldest, old spunk. Yeah.
which is the best spunk, they always say.
I have three older brothers. The eldest one is in his late 50s now. Mm. So he was married before. But yes, it was kind of strange having a dad from the silent generation, as they're called.
Yeah, what was he like? Was he very different to other dads when you were young?
Yeah, definitely. And like when you go to primary school, you're suddenly exposed to all these other dads who, you know, were like, I guess could be as young as 25. Mm. And they'd be like, your granddad's come to pick you up. And then suddenly I felt this like insane like shame around having an old dad, because he was embarrassing as well. He was like, he'd pick my brother up with pants on his head at school and stuff. He's quite like,
oh wow, that is,
yeah,
I thought
that
he was
an embarrassing move.
He's gone out of his way to embarrass you there.
Yeah, not only was he old, he's also incredibly humiliating. it wasn't until much later on that I was like, oh, it's actually quite cool having an old dad.
Yeah, was it sort of when you'd left school that it started to be cooler, or was it
after he died, I think? Yeah, after he died.
There's no cooler dad than a dead
dad. There's no rules.
He's so old, he's dead now. he was always he was an actor, so when I was trying to describe him to someone, he was kind of like, he had this Jim Broadbent quality, you know, the actor Jim Broadbent, like quite sweet and like eccentric. And then suddenly 5 minutes later it was Logan Roy from Succession.
Oh wow.
Like fuck off, fuck off, and then sort of peeing in corners of the garden.
Did your relationship with him change as he got older?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because presumably when you were like in your 20s, he was, I guess that's kind of, he'd be like a young granddad, but it's kind of granddad age.
Yeah, well, when I was 16, he was 66. But yeah, we fought like cat and dog when I was a teenager, just because we were, I hate to say it, you know, when you're, people would say we were so similar. My mom would be like, you're so much like your dad. And obviously that's just like the worst thing you can ever say to a hormonal teenage girl, that they're like a 66-year-old old Logan Roy. But she was right, I think. So we used to fight a lot. And also, you know, he was that generation that when he got sent to boarding school from a really young age, so he didn't even really meet teenage girls until he left. So he was from 8 to 18, he was in a boy, all boys boarding school. So then suddenly having to live with this teenage girl after having three sons, it was like we were just like, slamming doors. Imagine. Like, he just didn't know how to talk to me.
What's the situation then with the after having three sons? Is that all in your family unit? They're all your direct brothers?
Yes, so two are half brothers, and then one is my full brother from my mum, who was my dad's second wife.
So what's the age difference then? It's starting to sound like you might have quite a bit of an older brother situation here, perhaps.
Yes, I've got 56-year-old brother, and then a 51 or 50-year-old brother, and then a 34-year-old brother, and I'm 33. So yeah, when I was born, they were like 18.
Old enough to be your dad.
Yeah, maybe they are. Maybe it's all just plot twist.
I've done no research, which shows that
was that happened in EastEnders, didn't it, with Kat Slater?
Yeah, that's quite a common soap storyline. That's not actually your sister. That's your mum. Dun 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 dun.
Suspiciously older sister or mum. Yeah.
Interesting.
That's crazy. Oh wow! But I mean, that's like, that must have been really interesting and really kind of weird, kind of growing up with a brother who's old enough to be your dad and a dad who's old enough to be your granddad.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I've always been, it changed the way I was with my friends' parents at school. So they were obviously similar age to my brothers. So I would always meet my friends' parents and be like, oh, hey, like I was chatting to them kind of like equals.
Yeah.
Whereas when someone would meet, you know, when you meet someone with parents, you're like, oh, thank you, Mrs. like whatever. Thank you. But I'd always go, oh, hey, Jan, how are you doing? And so I kind of always never seen age as like a barrier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, my ex-boyfriend was like 29 years older than me as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't want to draw a line directly between the two, but it feels like there may be a link there.
What? That I want to fuck my dad, Rich? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm not saying it, but I'm raising my eyebrows.
Well, I think he was still 25 years younger than my dad, so...
Sure, it's more like you want to fuck your brother. How old were you at the time? What's the, if we could just get a couple of ages on this, just
So I was 24, he was 53. We were together for 6 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's breaking the rules, isn't it? It's meant to be half your age plus seven. There's no way that's going to work.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're not together anymore because of the age gap, because I think I'd quite like a family and he sort of had already done that. It was a very loving and beautiful relationship. Think back very fondly
I don't want to draw you back to something you said earlier, but you did sort of joke off the cuff earlier that it'd be nice if all your exes would come to your funeral.
Yeah, well, you know.
And I feel like someone's going to have to break it to you, but that's probably not going to happen on this occasion.
Either that or if you really get a move on. Maybe
you're going to have to speed it up.
Quite soon.
Okay, well, that's all right. I mean,
it's just unlikely.
Well, maybe I'll, you know, have a very glamorous death.
Yeah. How would you want to go if you were going to go
halfway through the fringe
on stage?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The news stories would be massive, wouldn't they?
And then there'll be an award.
Yeah, or just a 3 stars from Steve Bennett. That would be the
three star death. Yeah, 3.5. <That's laughs>
And the extra half is for the death.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the ex boyfriend who I was with, he's a civil celebrant and an actor. So he leads funerals. For people. That was his job.
Didn't you say your dad was an actor?
Here we go, yeah, back to the daddy issues. Yeah, he just really wants to learn more about this. Let's investigate.
Sorry. No, I don't mean to cut you off. I just can't help myself.
All right. Well, I'm an actor too, so I guess we met during a play. Of
course, in the circles. That's really nice. So tell me more about your dad then. You said he was an actor. Was he sort of a jobbing actor, a struggling actor, or are you going to say, actually, my dad was James Dean?
My dad is Ian McKellen.
Exactly.
So he went to RADA in the 1960s. And so, he was an actor for many years and then sort of gave that up to become a director. And so he ran theatres for a bit. But then he gave all of that up when I was born in 1990. So when I was born, the family moved to Somerset and I just grew up in the middle of nowhere on Exmoor.
Oh, wow. So what did he do when you were growing up? Was he retired? Or? He was a farmer. Wow. Yeah,
bad one.
That's a bold career change in your 50s, isn't it?
Yeah.
From actor to farmer.
Yeah. And he could only communicate to the animals as actors.
So, try and direct them.
Yeah, directing sheep around the field, like downstage.
Downstage left.
Yeah. Dressing them up in wigs. so he was a really bad farmer.
That's a really fun thing. My dad was not like a paid actor, but he was really into amateur dramatics the whole way through, massively obsessed with the stage. And, my childhood is constantly peppered with me being in the arts centres where we grew up watching them do stuff.
Wow.
And it's quite interesting because to me, it had quite a clearly opposite effect to you, where it sort of made me sort of go, no, I mean, I don't think I want to do that very much.
Really?
Whereas obviously, you must have, grown up around it and thought, oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, I think I just never really enjoyed anything else, really. I just always wanted to perform and stuff. I don't really claim to be very good at as well at anything else. Maybe parallel parking. I'm quite good at that.
Hard to get a job, parallel parking, of course.
Yeah. But that's interesting. So what roles do you remember your dad playing that like you liked or hated?
Max Bialystock, the producers, humongous performance, really, really off the chain, so much libretto. That was one of the main things where I was like, it's a lot to learn, this thing. It doesn't sound very easy. It sounds very hard.
I'd love to have seen that.
Very good. It was absolutely brilliant. My understanding is there is a recording of it, but it's a bit intense to watch it. But I believe I do believe he was very, very good.
My dad, sadly, I think there's any tape of him performing. He did briefly, I think, like your dad, Tommy, he wasn't like a lifelong amateur dramatics fan, but he did take part in, I want to say, the Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, once. Yes.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, towards the end of his life, I think probably a couple of years before he died. And my main memory of it is that he was in the chorus, and it was quite a big cast on quite a small stage.
Mm.
And he, at one point, he was in one of two rows dancing, and they would dance side to side, and he was right on the end. So for most of the time, they would dance to the side, he'd be off the stage, dancing in the darkness. Then he'd sort of dance back on for a bit.
Oh.
And then dance off again. And he'd just be, and that was his sort of, he was so nervous about the play, and he'd worked really hard on it, and then was just like, and most of the time you'll just be sort of essentially in a dark room on your own, doing a dance you've learnt, then briefly coming back to the spotlight, and then off again.
I'd say that's actually quite scene stealery.
Yeah. Well, it would be if anyone could have seen it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I believe he did it very well.
There's a real show. I mean, if someone was to do a biography of your dad, I feel like Dancing in the Darkness is a huge title. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic, isn't it? My dad, Bournemouth Gilbert and Sullivan Society. That was his, he was always doing the one who talks very quickly, that one.
Wow. My dad was obsessed with Gilbert and Sullivan.
That one. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. All our dads, that's the link.
Our dads just loved Gilbert and Sullivan.
They did,
and dying.
Yeah. So, and dying.
Three favorite famously. Things. And what a way to segue, Rich. Speaking of how our dads love dying.
tell us about
your dad. You know what happened?
It was June 2021. So just over 2 years ago. But he was very ill for a long time. So during the pandemic, kind of slow deteriorating. It wasn't COVID, but I would say that sort of contributed to his deterioration, because he had an illness called COPD, which is where you don't have a lot of breath. you can't. So he had breathing apparatus and he was not very mobile anymore. And then we couldn't really get carers in because of the pandemic. So he kind of just was quite stationary all the time. And so his health deteriorated a lot. And then my mum couldn't really, like, my mum was really struggling to care for him full time, but we just couldn't get the help. And then, yeah, he had a heart attack in the night is what happened. And I got a phone call about 8:30 in the morning from my brother, who's a doctor. So obviously really good at delivering bad news.
So he has to do
all the bad news. Yeah, literally trained. And then I drove down, and then obviously being unable to, you know, not make jokes, I just walked in and was like, hey guys, what's new, after just crying in the car for 4 hours back to Somerset, like, yeah guys, hey, what's new? And then my mom's just looking at me like traumatized, my brother's looking there like looking like a doctor. I couldn't stop making jokes. I was just like, gotta make jokes.
Have to cope.
Yeah, have to cope. Even at the funeral, I was like cracking them out, like got so drunk.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I think I was the same at the time. You kind of think everyone's going to be thinking how well I'm coping with this, whereas you're there making loads of jokes. Everyone's going, he is not coping with this at all.
Yeah, no. Like making jokes, like puns, but like crying.
Yeah, like
a sad clown.
How old was he then?
81.
That's the oldest dad we've had on the podcast, surely. I mean, that's an incredible.
Yeah, although still relatively young, I think he was so desperate to live because
that's the problem.
His mind was super sharp. So like he was very like quick in his head, but just his body was really letting him down because he smoked for a very long time, like 40 years. And he got throat cancer when I was 16. And then he went sort of from being quite this active dad that, you know, we'd play tennis all the time and stuff like that to kind of being much slower. And so over the period of time, that long period of time, he was very slowly deteriorating.
Oh, right. So from when you were 16, he was sort of, it was a steady decline. It wasn't.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I always knew my dad was going to die for a really long time. And that was always really hard. Because there was no, it wasn't like a doctor had gone, this is terminal, we've got 16 months, 6 months or whatever. It was like I was just kind of watching my dad sort of get slowly less, you know, physically able for from 16 to 31 essentially. And so when he passed away, it was almost like this sadness, but this also relief that I didn't have to see my dad the way he was at the end anymore. And also kind of this thing I'd been fearing for that this amount of time was no longer something I had to face.
Yeah. Sometimes it's almost like a relief when the thing you've been terrified of for so long finally happens and you're like, right, now I can actually deal with it. I don't have to just be worried about it all the time.
Yeah.
So how was it that the morning that you got the phone call, was it still a shock? Or
it was a shock, like we weren't expecting it, because the thing is, it'd been going on for so long, we just thought, god, it could be years, it could be weeks, it could be days. It's just like always waiting for this phone call. And so when it did happen, it was a shock, but it wasn't unexpected, if that makes sense. And then we all sort of came together, and the funeral was a few weeks later, and we had a woodland burial, which I don't know if you guys have heard much about woodland burials. It's kind of like
a little bit.
Yeah. So there's this woodland burial site near my family's home. It's really beautiful. It's like up on the hills in Exmoor, and it's all, you plant a tree and it's all like environmentally friendly. So we just buried my dad in this wicker casket. And then people sort of came just to share their, you know, stories about my dad. So I spoke, and then people just kind of talked if they want to, which was really nice around the grave. It wasn't cremated or anything like that. And then, and then my mum bought the pitch next to him for a discount.
Get a discount?
They were like, oh, do you want to buy
two for one?
Yeah, literally. So I don't know who's going to go in there next, but someone is.
What a time. The wheeler and dealer involved in that, where it's like, now's the chance to sell this plot.
Yeah, 50% off if you get it in now.
Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Is she saving that for herself? Or?
Well, I mean, I love my mum, but like, I hope it's not someone else, because she's much older than all of us. But no, I mean, who knows?
Sometimes it's just good to have a grave in the back pocket, isn't it? Just in case.
Exactly. Yeah.
You never know when you might need one.
Exactly. Maybe it'll be for the cats.
You get a few of them in there.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I think, yeah, it was very beautiful. I think that's how I'd like to go as well, in a woodland burial.
It sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Did you say something about planting a tree?
It's like you kind of go there and it's like an orchard, and you can't have anything that's not environmentally friendly. So it's like everything's kind of made of wood, and it's right on the Exmoor Hills, and it's just very really beautiful. And I remember when we went to go and pick a spot to bury him, me and my brother went, and we found 2 4-leaf clovers next to each other.
No way.
Yeah, and then we gave one to each other, and then that was where we buried my dad.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I still
got
it.
Still, yeah.
But
that's a lovely story.
Yeah. Still waiting for it to come true, though.
Yeah, of course. It's almost ironic to get a good luck omen when you're finding a place to bury your dad.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit, does it?
We're waiting to cash that in.
So it's been just over 2 years since your dad died. How's it been?
Yeah.
Good. Laugh a minute.
It's been up and down, I think. I think the hardest thing for me was my brother has a family and children and a wife, and I was coming home to an empty flat. I think for me, not having my own family unit was really tough, because you kind of think, oh my God, you know, I'm 30, in my early 30s, and I haven't, all of these sort of milestones haven't been achieved, and now my dad's dead. It just felt very unfair and scary, because you're like, well, if my mum goes, then I'll have no one. But that's not true anyway. I've got an amazing set of friends and family. I've got a godson, a niece and nephew, but those sometimes continue to be the darkest moments. But then also there's been really good things as well, because I started doing stand-up soon after he passed away. And that's been like life-changing, really.
Nice. And was that in any way sort of a direct response, do you think?
I think I was sort of weirdly waiting for him to pass away, because when you're waiting for something like that to happen, your life feels like it's on hold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've got a friend of mine who was caring for his sick parents for years, and then when they passed away, he was suddenly able to do all of these amazing things. And I think it is like that when you've got a parent that's ill. It is like your life's on hold. You can't really move forward.
Well, yeah, because you're always pulled back to something. It's hard to make a big change in your life when you've got this constant sort of worry and knowledge that something big is going to happen. Something
eventually.
Big and quite devastating is going to happen, maybe soon, maybe in a year, maybe in 2 years.
Exactly. It's really hard. It's just like a weight on you. And when he passed away, it's so sad, because I miss him so much. But it's also like, this huge relief, because this thing has gone, this scary thing, and I survived it, and I did it on my own. I didn't have anyone. Just, my cat, who, you know, is great, but, you know, not emotionally available, really.
You can't have great chats with a cat.
I try. God damn, I try.
You have good chats at a cat, certainly. How old's the cat? How long's the cat been?
He's 4.
Around?
I got him the first day of lockdown. Ooh. Atticus Finch, he's called. Oh, Atticus.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, getting a cat was life changing. Obviously, it's the cat lady stereotype, I realise, but it's a stereotype for a reason, because it's really, like really nice. Yeah, it's those weird things the things that you're not expecting to remind you of them, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, well, I had that, you know, I was like, when was the last time we spent time together? What did I say to him? And I felt guilty, because I'd go home and I'd see my mum, because I wanted to like give my mum a bit of respite from having to care for him. So sometimes sometimes my dad could be a bit annoying. So I didn't want to sit with him. I wanted to sit with mum. And then I felt guilt. And also you have this feeling where you're like, and you're ill, and it makes me sad, so I don't want to sit with you.
Yeah.
Like, and that's such a selfish thing. And then so you go and sit with mum and watch telly with mum while your dad's sitting alone in another room. He sort of played a lot of online bridge. And I just didn't. And occasionally he'd be like, Katie, come in here and talk to me. And I'd go in and I'd sit with him. But then he'd sort of say something really annoying or slightly offensive. And even though you know he's ill. So I felt, a lot of guilt around that. I should have sat with him for hours.
But it's a very human thing, isn't it? Because it's very easy when someone dies or when someone's ill that you then stop thinking of them as a human, as a person who's got flaws and good things and bad things. And we kind of expect that they should be treated like heroes constantly. And you see, when people die, you're not allowed to speak ill of the dead. But the truth is that, you know, because you're ill or because you're dying, it doesn't mean that sometimes you're not a bit annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's scared, and also he could be a little bit entitled, I think, sometimes, just as a person. Like, I think it was a lot of boarding school behaviour.
Right.
And so, he could be a bit of a knob. And so, yeah, you're just kind of like, well, you're a dick. Like, stop being a dick.
Yeah, yeah. But I always think it's
you're a dying dick.
Well, people don't stop being a dick just because they're dying. If anything, they get worse a lot of the time.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So I think carers are amazing, people that are carers. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they need to be paid so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's important to remember when people die, it's important to remember the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. Otherwise, you don't remember them properly.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often, I'll talk to my brothers and my mum about stuff that my dad did that was... yeah, quite annoying or just weird. He just did quite a lot of weird stuff. I think we've discussed it on this podcast before, maybe, but I remember we went on a ferry once to France when I was quite young, and we stayed, me and my dad stayed in like the bunk bed room. So I was on the bottom bunk, he was on the top bunk, and he drank 4 pints of lime cordial that night. Which is such a phenomenal amount of lime cordial to drink in one single night. It's always stuck with me because, as far as I remember, I never again saw him drink lime cordial. But I just remember being on the bottom bunk and him coming down and getting and just like downing a pint of lime cordial and going back to sleep again. And it's such a weird memory, but I do, in many ways, I think it sums up quite a lot of the strangeness of who he was as a person. You can't remember all the good stuff
forget
that he's also a man who could drink 4 pints of lime cordial in one night for essentially no reason. Entirely context-free lime cordial.
How are you around lime cordial now?
I don't drink it often, but I like a lime cordial. I get very annoyed in pubs when they make you pay for it, which is it's maybe a hangover from my dad. I think the truth might be is that I think he might have got quite drunk that night and was drinking a lot to sober up during the night. But as a sort of 10-year-old boy, I was just like,
"Stop waking me up! Yeah,
stop drinking lime cordial loudly in front of me.
Stop drinking my lime cordial."
Yeah.
I'm your child.
Okay. And he brought four pints to bed. I assumed one of them would be for me, but
from the sort of brief knowledge I have of your dad. You know, he was just so loud. His existence was quite a loud one. Like, I walked past the kitchen and I remember he was sort of in there, sort of going like... like, he was making all these noises.
Men are just loud, by the way. You guys, you can't sneeze quietly. You can't cough loudly. You can't cough quietly. You can't poo quietly, but you come silently. That's your problem, all of you.
This sort of lovely woodland... burial, was that actually the funeral itself as well, or was that separately held? So that was the same thing.
Yeah, everyone we hired like a civil celebrant, a woman, and she sort of led it. But yeah, we all met, so everyone gathered in the woodland. Everyone that was invited, well, wanted to come, and there were a lot of people there. It was really nice.
This is what I was getting into. It is me and Rich have sort of had a bit of an argument in the past over the numbers. I claim that a few hundred people went to my dad's funeral. Rich lies and sort of invents a number in the thousands. And I was just wondering how many people went to your dad's funeral.
No, not that many. But I mean, 81. I think it was like 60.
If that's a real number, you see, Rich. You could learn something from Katie, because that's actual facts. That many people went.
Yeah.
But I think that's pretty good for an 81-year-old man.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
I do wonder if funerals become like, we're all at the age now where weddings are a bit like, oh God, I've got another wedding this weekend. I wonder when you get to your 80s.
You came to my wedding a few months ago. That's an outrageous thing.
I know.
So I think we need to call people out for getting married. I've been a bridesmaid 5 times and it's still going up.
Ooh, five times though.
Yeah. And I never get a plus one.
Really?
No.
As a bridesmaid, you don't get a plus one.
Everyone's like, oh, she'll be single. No, she won't have anyone.
You're meeting people Gen Z on the street.
I know, but then they invite me kayaking and then they...
catches.
Then they, yeah, they capsize.
Kayak to the wedding, it'll be fine.
No, yeah, lots of weddings.
Yeah,
lots
I wonder if...
I have to sing a lot, speeches.
Oh, of course, yeah. So you have to be involved in the wedding.
Yeah.
And then they still don't give you a plus one. That is out of order. But do you think funerals become that way when you're in your 80s? That sort of, when the first one dies, you're like, oh yeah, we'll all go. And it's a really big, special occasion. And then later on, when you're with your group of friends, when you're down to the last three and one of them dies, you're like, oh, do we have to go to another funeral? This is...
But you've got an excuse when you're old. It's like, I can't get there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, good point. And if you say it in that voice, it really helps.
Yeah.
I imagine.
That's really going to help.
We had a lot of that, you know. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't come to your father's funeral. I'm so old. So old.
Just ring up and say, I'm so old. And you go, okay, don't worry. That's fine.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm too old.
Too old to move. I thought it would be the other way around. I thought, you know, you get older and you don't get invited to as many social events anymore. And so, you know, someone dies and it's like, oh, fantastic. You know, I get to pop on my dress and, you know, head out into the great wide world for a day, for a lovely day out, have a sandwich, that kind of thing.
Maybe.
Did you have to ring up and tell people your dad was dead? I had to do that.
No, I didn't. But how was that experience?
Oh my god, I didn't expect that. I had to do it. So I thought my brother would have to do it because, you know, he's a GP. So it was like, my father passed away, 200 like 1800 hours. No, he doesn't speak like that. Just speaks really normally, actually. Yeah, my mum was like, okay, you need to ring these people. And so I, yeah, it's a ring up and tell them the mourning of my dad. Yeah.
Which people were these, like friends of his?
Family friends of ours. And I think the worst one was, so my dad had a cousin who they spoke every day, and he was also in his 80s, and they were very, very close. And grew up together. So when my dad was, his parents sort of abandoned him a little bit to go and, you know, they were kind of like quite well off, and they just went and lived in Hong Kong during the war and just didn't really see my dad. So he was brought up with his cousin's family. And so they were just very close. And he's very old, so hadn't listened to the answer phone message someone had left him. So he rang up when we were all at home and said, he'd always do this thing where he would pretend to be a character, like he'd pretend to be an MP or something, to my dad. So he'd ring up and be like, it's the local MP, and like drew this character. So him and my dad would just joke about this all the time, and they'd go on these bridge holidays together and stuff, and they obviously are very close. And so he rang up and did a character the morning after my dad had died, and I had to say, oh, I'm really sorry, Robin, dad died last night.
But he's saying character.
Well, this is the thing. It's like they're so repressed, these old men, that he sort of went, oh dear. I'm sorry. All right. Thank you. And then just sort of hung up.
Oh, God.
But it was like almost as if I said, Dad's gone to the, Dad will be back in about an hour.
Yeah.
Dad's gone to the post office, or Dad's, it was actually, that was awful.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, really heartbreaking. And we have met up a few times. I've made the effort to meet up. So, you know, you do all these things. Yeah, we invited him over. I cooked him Christmas dinner.
Lovely.
Yeah, cousin Robin, I cooked him Christmas dinner.
Nice.
But he was too fucking annoying, so I don't want to see him again. No, he's really nice.
No chance to listen to this. Don't worry about it.
We're actually married. We're engaged.
Oh, no.
But yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Did you guys become obsessed with things that your dad was obsessed with? Because my dad was obsessed with ancestry DNA and sort of like tracking down our family trees and stuff. And I found it so boring when he would talk at me about it. You know, I'd just be like, oh, shut up. And since he's passed away, I've become obsessed. And I've got an Ancestry DNA kit waiting for me after this podcast that I'm going to
take. Really?
Yeah, even though it'll just be like 100% British pork or whatever. But it's, I've become obsessed with watching Who Do You Think You Are? I've built my family tree online and I've gone back and found all these ancestors. And yeah, it's just been really interesting. But when he was telling me about it, I was just like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, it just, things take on a new meaning, don't they? I hated Pink Floyd. My dad loved Pink Floyd, and I was always, they're so boring. Now I love Pink Floyd. And yes, it is, and every time I listen to them, I think, ah, oh, my dad liked Pink Floyd.
Yes.
I think there's a really big thing in when somebody dies, there's something they were putting into the world, and now that they've died, they can't anymore. And so there's almost a duty that mm-hmm. you have to continue putting into the world what they were doing. My dad was a vegetarian, and after he died, I just went full cope, ate loads of meat, and then went, I'm just going to stop eating meat because at least that's something. And sort of almost a conscious decision, and I've ended up sort of broadly vegan at this point.
I feel terrible. My dad was vegetarian. I've not done that. I just, shit, I'm a bad person.
Like, no, but you've taken on the ancestry thing. That's the,
yeah, that's what you've done.
That's like not helping anyone, is it? It's not helping animals.
It's helping ancestry. You're giving them some money. You know, you've bought one of their kits. That's,
yeah.
That's what,
yeah, I spent 90 quid.
Would have happened, right? They'd earned that £90 or from your dad, effectively. You were just carrying it through.
It's true. Thank you.
He wanted to know his ancestry, and ultimately you are going to find out that information by finding out your own.
Yeah, right. I'll find out my brother is my dad. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and then we'll have you back on the podcast. My God.
I tell you what, it would be good. Rich, I'm struggling with the Pink Floyd one, unless if they put out an album since, because maybe, you know, you've given them some sales.
Well, no, I don't think I've carried on his legacy in that way. I have, since he died, I've been practicing as a GP, which I think illegally. But
yeah, of course, back alley.
He was doing a lot of good for the people of Chatterley Corbett, and since then I've just been ringing them in the night and being like, anything wrong with you? Can I help? I don't think I've helped. I think I would be struck off. Yeah.
Well, your dad gave people medicine.
Yeah.
And they say laughter is the best medicine.
I see.
Since he died, you became a stand-up.
It makes a lot of sense.
I'm just wondering if the funeral, if your dad's funeral did provide you very much closure, or if it didn't really do very much.
I think it did. I think it provided closure. It was a very beautiful day. And it was, I got to talk about him. I spoke, and then I heard what other people had to say. Obviously, I got too pissed, so I felt rotten the next day. But yeah, it definitely provided closure on some, you know, because it had been a long way coming.
That's really cool. I feel like a lot of people don't have that experience where it kind of feels just like a thing you have to do. Maybe I'm just talking for myself. It just felt more like you have a funeral because somebody has died. That's the thing you do. Great. And now we just carry on. I wouldn't say that I actually necessarily felt much closure from it. So it's kind of, it's really cool that you did. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. I think it's something to do with the fact that the whole journey of his death was so long and sort of quite distressing for us as a family. Finally laying him to rest in such a beautiful setting, not too far away from our home, because we had this really, it was quite ritualistic in the sense that we all sort of wore like kind of just like, I guess, nice sort of summery clothes. And then we walked from our house through the woodland to the burial site, gathered, sounds so kind of hippie-ish and weird.
That's amazing.
We picked flowers along the way, and then we walked, and so we had all these flowers, and then we my dad knew how, we had some friends that played, he loved playing live music, so he was really bad. He loved live music, so we had friends that played, that we had a string quartet who didn't sound perfect, but it was just very like they were playing as we were coming in, and then we all just put the flowers in the grave, and then everyone spoke, and it was very kind of loose.
We're in this beautiful woodland.
Yeah.
There's a string quartet. You're walking in holding flowers.
Yeah, and then I married my dad. My brother's my dad. What's going on? This is fine. Yeah, it was. Yeah, but then I think it's because, yeah, funerals are seen as this kind of, there's this darkness to them. And it was really sad, but it was also really beautiful. And it was like a celebration of his life in that sense. So yeah, it was, I guess, yeah, there were wedding-y vibes. But yeah, someone got married, obviously, and there was no talk of love and weddings, but it was about death and putting in and nature, and because he wasn't religious at all, so there was no kind of like that aspect to it wasn't involved. And I think it's Quaker funerals where people just sort of are invited to walk forward and say something if they want to. And that's what we did, even though, yeah, we're not Quakers, but we just kind of did what we wanted. And also when you go to a crematorium funeral, there's you have to be a certain amount of time. You have to stick to this certain amount of time. It's quite regimented because they have other funerals coming in. So you're kind of like, you all have to leave. And so people, you're forced out a bit, forced out of the building, so they can get the next one in the oven. Whereas we didn't have that here. Everyone kind of like hung around, and that was what was nice about it. So maybe that's why it felt a bit more.
So I'd quite like that for my funeral. I think that sounds really
sounds
nice.
Lovely, doesn't it? How many people did step forward and speak?
About 5 or 6, I think.
Right, okay.
And they all had like funny stories, and yeah, it was really nice. Like, very special.
Nice. I feel like you do run a slight risk if you've got, like, anyone can step forward and speak, that there'll be a point midway through when the 15th person comes up and you're like, did you know him? Who are you? What are you?
Yeah.
Talking?
He was a dick.
That's what a lot of people trying to get stuff off their chest.
Bring forward the rings.
Someone steps forward and is like, he actually owed me £500. So if anyone would,
I think that's funny.
Do need to get rid of his debts before he passes away. It sounds so nice, though. I mean, it just sounds like, well, as you say, and it brought you closure. So maybe we've actually been doing it wrong, and the creme funeral is just, you know, as you said, very regimented, doesn't bring much closure. The party afterwards is I guess quite good, but then presumably you all headed back and had a massive rager.
Well, we had food at the house, and then everyone sort of left, and then I was the one still pissed.
You had a massive rager.
You had a big one.
No one else did. No.
Yeah.
I think it's because I knew I was speaking. So I had to write a eulogy, and so I was writing it for about 2 weeks. And, you know, kind of like when you've got like something coming up, and then afterwards you kind of let it all go. I think that was why I got so drunk. I was so nervous about it. And I knew I had to do it because I knew my brothers wouldn't do it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of pressure on you
to get it right.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very good excuse for getting very pissed.
And it was my wedding day, guys. Like, come on, give me a...
It was your special day.
I married that guy.
giving you this.
And you mentioned earlier that your mum used to say that you were like your dad when you were a teenager.
Horrible.
Do you feel that you're similar to him now?
Yeah, horrible.
In a horrible way.
Well, I mean, I've started doing this thing that my dad used to do. So when he used to walk into different rooms, he used to sort of shuffle and sort of go, you know, like make sort of noises. And like when he, and then like, oh, and I definitely do that now.
What, like sort of old man noises?
Yeah, like I do it now. When we finish this podcast, I'll get up and I'll go like that. Or like, you know, when you're like really tired, you're like,
yeah.
And like you said, men can't do anything quietly, so that all has to involve quite a lot of noise.
Yeah, I don't want that.
So what other ways are you similar to? Do you think?
I guess I'm the only one that's pursued a career in performing arts. That's the obvious one.
Yeah.
Other things is like a little. I'm very I cry very easily. I think he was quite sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Get quite emotional. We both play the recorder.
Lovely. Not a lot of people still playing the recorder in their 30s.
Yeah, I know. Apart from Lizzo. So.
Oh yeah, she's made it cool again.
Yeah. Blue, well, actually, famously, I made it cool before. Lizzo copied me, actually.
Won that
on record.
That's the provenance of that.
Oh, she copied my dad.
You just drop in Three Blind Mice, the sort of Hot Cross Buns, the classics.
Titanic.
Or are you sort of doing the sort of the modern hits?
Gangnam Style and stuff.
Toxic by Britney.
Oh, nice.
Wait, Titanic. Hang on, wait. What are you talking? Not as a joke. Or legitimately, you can play Toxic on the recorder.
Yes.
I mean,
do you have a recorder to hand?
You have to come see. You have to come. No, well, you have to come and see my show.
Oh,
that's a great tease.
Okay. Well, how about that for a teaser? If you would like to hear Katie Norris bash out Toxic on her recorder, then you got to get yourself to Angel Comedy Club on the 14th of September, 9:45 p.m. The Bill Murray is the name of the venue. It's in Angel, and you will be able to hear that track. It's only £5 a ticket. That's very cheap, very reasonable.
And it is... it's the best comedy club in London. So
really?
You'd be a fool to know. Oh, the Bill Murray is an absolute delight.
Oh, this,
it's a lovely place.
This is the kind of analysis that I simply cannot provide.
Yeah. I mean, if you want me to rank the best comedy clubs in London, based largely on how willing they are to book me.
Go on, your top three.
No, but the Bill Murray is the number one. I'm happy to say that. And the rest are all joint second or last.
Fantastic. Depending on your worldview.
Yeah, but Katie's show is, I'm going to try and go on the 14th because it sounds great. And she was so funny. There's a lot of stuff that we had to cut out of the episodes for various reasons, but it was all very, very funny.
Well, we talked to people for 2 hours, you know, that ended up being about 45 minutes. So it is what it is. Farm Fatale, it's called. Give it a Google. You could also check her out on Instagram at KatieNorris26. Where you might be listening to this in the future and that show's already been and gone, but I'm sure it's a work in progress. She'll be doing it again. I doubt she's going to stop there unless it goes really badly, I suppose.
Or too well.
Maybe
she does the show so well that there's no point ever doing it again.
No point. And she leaves comedy. It's like, that was actually... It's too good a high.
Yeah.
It can't be better. So please do go along if you have a good time. And apparently you might even see Rich there.
I might be there.
How about that?
Do not talk
to
me.
Rich might be there lurking. He hates talking to you, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He always hates talking to the fans.
Leave me alone.
Speaking of the fans, we've had some lovely messages in this week from people. Personal messages as well as one on Instagram just saying thank you for the podcast. And people saying it's been helpful to them, which is absolutely... Honestly, you know, I don't know if you've experienced this, Rich, but for me, sort of the whole talking about my dead dad thing can be quite emotional sometimes.
Mm.
Like when you're always just constantly remembering that your dad continues to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a nice pick me up when someone sends you a message and goes, this podcast was actually quite beneficial and that was really the whole thing I wanted it to be. So.
Yeah, because it sometimes feels, I don't know, we feel like we're just talking to each other about it and then occasionally other people.
Yeah, and we sort of forget.
You forget that
say something terrible.
It's going out to other people. And also that it might, the fact that it helps people is great. It really does make it feel worthwhile, which is good.
Yeah, it does indeed. So thank you so much for that. But there are more ways you can help us than simply sending a message.
There really are. I mean, we don't want to keep banging this. It's season two. You'd think maybe we should leave the review drum at home.
Season.
But are we going to bang the review drum? I think we should bang the review drum.
Be the RD. Let's go.
Please leave us a review. On
5-star review, please.
Yeah, 5-star. Sort of goes without saying. If you're going to go to the effort of giving us a review, 5 stars are nothing, to be honest.
I'm not asking for an honest review. I'm just asking for a 5-star review.
Yeah. On Apple Music. Nope, Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. And Spotify is also fine. But
yes.
Apple Podcasts is the best one. Give us that 5-star review.
And if you want to write something, we'll read it out on the podcast if you want us to. Make that. If you don't want us to, make it clear in the comment. And if you've, we'll answer any questions or we'll sort of do any shout outs that you want us to do. We are very, very hungry little boys who want to eat
as many reviews
as we can. And we love
delicious
our stars.
Reviews and our delicious little chats as well, which we have on Instagram in the comment sections as well as in the messages. We've been getting some lovely fun interaction on there for the videos we put up. So please do get in touch on Instagram. Get in touch on X, formerly known as Twitter as well, if you like.
Yes.
Just communicate and we'll communicate back at you.
We also have an email address and we once again ask him for a very specific type of email.
One type of email, please.
Yes, so later on this week slash early next week, we're going to be recording the second series version of our dreams episode. So if you've listened to the first series, we had an episode all about dreams, about the weird dreams we'd had about our dads. We've been asking some of our guests for their weird dreams, and we've been asking for yours. This is your last chance. So send in either on Instagram through a review, via the email address, on X, if you'd like to keep it below 280 characters, whatever it is. Tell us about dreams you've had about your dead dad, your dead mum, whoever's died in your life. Tell us all about them, because we want as many as we can to sort of analyze with our trusty dream dictionary.
Yes, please.
So if you've been thinking of doing it, if you had one recently, if you had one a while ago, now is your chance. Send us an email right now. Stop the podcast. Mm. Send an email. Do not hesitate, or you might be too late.
Indeed. It truly is a dream job doing this podcast.
Very, very strange that I could see you were sitting on something all the way through that speech. And it was underwhelming when it came. You had a little look in your eyes of like, oh, I've got something here. I've got it.
Yeah, it's reused as well. I put that in an article I wrote recently. So it was already in there.
Well,
I
have had a number. I think I texted you the other day. I think I've got three dad dreams to share with you, ranging from
interesting,
quite profound to ridiculous. So that'll be exciting.
I have one absolutely game-changing dream.
Oh, okay.
It's a real humdinger. It's a barnstormer. I've been, you know, teasing this dream for a little while on this podcast now, but it is absolutely unbelievable. I had to write it down on a docs just after it happened because I didn't want to forget any of that. So I've got I have a 6 a.m. you know,
on
the phone, quickly written dream. So it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer.
Nice.
And I'm very excited to share it with you. I've been waiting now for at this point several months. So
yeah,
it's going to be a good one.
If you want to get in on that action, send us your dream. Otherwise, you'll be hearing our dreams and Tom's game-changing dream. I think next week. It might be the next episode coming out.
Next week. It's going to be next week on Our Dad's Died. And remember, death comes for us all.
But it comes for you first.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
So good. So fucking good.